Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 284. Hopefully you folks out there still have your hearing after the 4th of July weekend. I know here in Omaha, we had fireworks on the 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th, and then some people had enough left over for the 5th. And then last night, as I'm trying to go to sleep, there's still people blowing stuff up on the 6th. Like, I wish I had that much money, but to each their own, however you want to spend it, so be it. We are back on the interview podcast. We are here with Jared Rone, the head men's basketball coach at Mount Vernon Nazarene College in Ohio. And it's Ohio, right, coach? I don't want to get that wrong.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So excited to have Jared on the podcast here this week. But before we get to coach, we want to talk about our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, whatever it may be, first of all, subscribe. Second of all, write a 5-star review. We move up in the rankings and all of that good stuff. So make sure that you do that. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin.com@gmail.com. Sorry, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Sorry, my hearing, my equilibrium is all messed up from all the fireworks that have been going off here, so I'm still recovering here. Enough of that stuff. Let's get to Jared Rone, the head men's basketball coach, Mount Vernon Nazarene, out of Ohio here. Coach, how you doing this fine Monday morning?
I'm doing well, Marty. We saw a lot of fireworks this past weekend as well, so I understand where you're coming from, but hope everyone had a great 4th of July weekend, and looking forward to talking some basketball with you.
How'd your family spend the 4th, Coach?
We usually, my wife's family is about an hour away, and my parents are about an hour and 15 minutes away, so we spent a day over at my in-laws and spent a day over at my parents, so... Well. It's a good time to connect.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Well, Coach, really excited to have you on the podcast this week. Building some really good things there at Mount Vernon Nazarene. Let's just jump right into it, Jared. For folks that don't know about you, about your basketball journey, tell us about it and how you ended up being the head men's basketball coach there at Mount Vernon Nazarene.
Yeah, so I grew up around the game. My dad was a longtime college coach and high school coach. So I've kind of been around the game ever since I was born. And I've always kind of been on a team.
Yes.
I went on, I played high school basketball for my father. Then went on and played 4 years of college basketball, and kind of knew pretty early on that I wanted to be a coach. I didn't know if I wanted to be a high school or college coach, but I knew I wanted to stay around the game and be a coach. And when I was a GA in the Health and Sports Science Department at the University of Dayton, and then I kind of volunteered my time with the UD men's basketball program when Brian Gregory was the head coach.
Yep.
There.
Mm-hmm.
And then helped my dad out at Middletown High School. He was the head coach at Middletown High School, which wasn't the one from Dayton. So I helped him out there. And then I got my first opportunity in college as an assistant at Ashland University under John Ellenwood, who's been the longtime coach there at Ashland. He got the job. I was his first hire there at Ashland and was there for 4 years and then went on to UNC Asheville. And worked for Nick McDevitt. Was a great experience working for Nick, who's now at Middle Tennessee State. And then from UNC Asheville, I went to Mount Vernon Nazarene University here in Ohio. It was kind of a perfect setup. I had just gotten married a year and a half before, and my wife's family was, like I said earlier, from about an hour away from Mount Vernon, and my parents were an hour and 15 minutes away, right in the middle. So pretty unique situation where I could get, come back to my home state, my wife's home state, and be at a university so close to family. So we're incredibly grateful for NDNU. We're incredibly grateful that we get to raise our family here in a really, really neat community, university in town. And that's kind of my experience, my journey, as a coach and a player. And like I said earlier, I've always been a part of a team. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine not being a part of a team. And I love the opportunity to be the head coach here at NDNU.
How long have you been there, Coach, for folks that don't know?
This will be going into my 11th year.
Yeah.
Going into my 11th year. So we came here, me and my wife came here, just us. and now we have three children. And I guess I can say this, we'll be expecting our fourth this year as well. So we've kind of really, really grown a really, really unique community here. And it's a great place to raise a family. So
mm-hmm. We've broken a few news stories here on A Pen and a Napkin, but this may be the most satisfying one of them all. Congratulations, Coach. That's awesome.
We actually just told our family this past weekend, and we've told some close friends. I guess it's out there now.
Now you're telling the world, six or seven continents will now know that the Ronays will be expecting child number four. So awesome. Great to hear. That's great. When our newest category here on the pod, the Karen Self, A Pen and a Napkin moment, when do you remember the first time drawing up those X's and O's on that piece of paper, or taking that pen and that napkin and scratching that stuff out, Coach?
Oh, without a doubt, when I was a kid, my dad, I would go on recruiting trips with my dad all the time. And whether it was, the back of a program or a napkin at a restaurant, or grabbing the salt shaker and pepper shake, whatever it may be. It was definitely on the road recruiting with him. That's where, I really enjoy, now I take my kids recruiting with me all the time, just because I remember those experiences with my dad and really kind of developed the love, obviously, for the game, but also just kind of evaluating the game, evaluating talent. Watching so many different teams run so many different nuances of offenses and defenses, and talking to my dad at such an early age about the game. So it was definitely on the road recruiting with him, and watching kids all over Ohio and all over the Midwest, really, where that kind of sparked the love of X's and O's and the nuances of the game of basketball.
Your dad is obviously a huge influence on your career. Play for your dad, doing that, you've kind of mentioned a little bit of it, but just, do you feel like having your dad being a coach, did that help you with understanding the game? It felt like, did you feel like intellectually you were just a couple of steps ahead? The game slowed down for you a little bit more because you had spent so much time in the gym with your father?
Thinking about it, on the moment here, I think so. Yes, absolutely. Just because I was kind of entrenched in basketball at such an early age. And then also, just being, I played the point guard position, and I think, I know in today's world of basketball, what kind of everybody talks about positionless basketball nowadays, but, when I was young and growing up, and when I played and when I watched my dad's teams, the point guard was like the quarterback.
Yep.
Out there on the floor. And there were five very specific positions out there, most of the time, and each team had a point guard. And I felt like I always kind of thought like a point guard. I think my dad kind of saw the game through the point guard's eyes, in most cases. So yeah, just being around his teams, being around him, I think that was definitely, an advantage for me as a player and now as a coach.
Now that you're coaching, does dad help you out? Do you go to dad and say, "Hey, take a look at this film against, Northern Ohio, or, whomever. What do you think? Where am I missing something here? What do you think of that? Or is it pretty well hands off? Dad's just there to puff out the chest to be, have the proud dad moment."
No, he's always been the same for me. He's incredibly invested in our program. He's the athletic director at Toledo St. John's High School. He got done coaching probably about 11, 12 years ago, I would say. And he's been the AD up there, but he's been highly involved in our program. He comes to probably 12 to 15 games a year with my mom still. And he'll go out and recruit for me. And I always joke with him, if he ever listens to this, he'll probably have a smirk. But, it doesn't matter how good we play or how bad we play. He's going to tell me what we're doing wrong. So, and I appreciate that out of him immensely. And just because he's so invested. He's so invested in our players and our team. So he is. I'm sure he has some proud dad moments.
Yeah.
And I know he does. I know he does for sure. But he's still. Because I play for him.
Mm-hmm.
He was my high school coach. So there's still. There's obviously a father son relationship is at the forefront, the most important. But there's still a player coach relationship there as well, and I think that'll come up. That kind of comes up at times when we're talking about my team and different things that we can improve and get better.
Yeah, you talked about being a point guard, and traditionally, many coaches who are former players come from the point guard position. There's just something about it. How do you feel now with some perspective, coach? How do you feel that your experience as a player, as a point guard, kind of has helped you, has kickstarted your coaching career, and has enabled you to have the success that you've had as a coach?
Yeah, I think it's helped a great deal, just because, as I alluded to earlier, when I came up playing. The point guard, was like the quarterback on the floor. And I think a lot of programs, point guards have a different relationship with their coach. And I obviously had a very unique relationship, obviously playing for my dad, but even in college. So like I had a unique relationship with my coach, and I always wanted to communicate with him and be on the same page. And I think, with that position, it carries responsibility out there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a certain command on the floor. You have to have a certain confidence, in yourself and in what you're doing as a team. And I think that helped me a lot transitioning into coaching. That gave me the confidence on the floor, the communication skills that I think that I was just slowly developing as a young kid going into a high school and college player. Just I was someone that was always very vocal on the floor, and that kind of came natural to me, and I think that has helped me a great deal as I transitioned into coaching. But the biggest thing, the confidence thing, but also kind of as a young coach, it helps you kind of create some credibility, early on. I played when I first got in coaching with my dad's team at Middletown High School. We had a very, very talented group. Had multiple Division I players on that team, and I kind of worked them out all the time. So him giving me that opportunity to work those guys out all the time and take a really, really big role on the coaching staff, also helped, really, really propel my confidence in who I am as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Coaching today is let's be honest, it's harder than it ever has been. And the demands on us, the things that coaches are asked to do, the lengths that we are supposed to go to be the best coach that we can be, it's becoming more and more difficult. A lot of coaches come into their coaching career and they feel really, really good about their X's and O's knowledge, the technical aspects of the game. And I was very much the same way. That's what I thought coaching was all about. But it's so much more than that. It's about being, especially at the high school level. And you can say the same thing at the college level or even the professional level. It's about being the CEO of your program. Folks, I think I've put together maybe the best thing I've ever done, and that is my third book coming out here this fall, 365 Days of Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO. And what I was able to do was to put together 365 separate concepts of what it takes to become a basketball CEO of your program. This is all divided into basically 10 different areas: book studies, coach studies, X's and O's. So you gotta know what the 2-3 zone defense is all about, zone sets, defensive tenets, whatever that may be. Culture, building a great culture at your program. Your game day execution. What are you doing on a game day on a daily basis when you're going into competitions? Skill development. Personal development, finding time for you, taking a vacation, handling failure, creating your resume, practice, how to build a great practice, how to become a great practice coach, off-season workout ideas, and miscellaneous coaching topics. 365 Days of Hoops has those 10 topics subdivided into 365 different things that you need to do as a basketball coach. At the end of every page, there is space to journal, to write, to X's and O's, everything that you need to do to take that topic, to think about it, and to think about what you are going to do. This is going to be available early this fall. Don't have an exact date yet, but I wanted to put that out there for you coaches so that you know what's coming out here. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you. One thought a day, take 3 to 5 minutes every day to think about it. And by the time you're done with this book, you are going to be really, really be prepared to be a basketball CEO of your program. So keep your eye out on it for 365 Days Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, coming this fall from A Pen and a Napkin. Each coach should, if they don't have it, they should have, you know, a pillars type of thing. What do we stand for? What is going to be our identity? And for you, coach, you've come up with the acronym RULE. And I know what it is. I've kind of examined a little bit, but I really, really like this concept here that you've developed, and I'm excited to talk further about it with you here today. So let's talk about RULE, your pillars for your program, what you're establishing. It's something that you literally wear with a lot of pride. You have it as part of your camp themes and different things like that. So talk to us about RULE.
Yeah, RULE Cougar has been the values of our program from day one, and the way we kind of organize the environment that we try to build year in and year out. We start with kind of the first pillar is our why. The why of our program is to pursue Christ while in the pursuit of championships. The second pillar is our values, and that's where RULE Cougar comes into play, and those are relentless, unbreakable leadership and excellence, and more specifically, relentless effort, unbreakable spirit, servant leadership, and competitive excellence. And all those values, they have a critical behavior behind them. So the guys, so our players kind of understand, you know, how are we living out these specific values in specific areas?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I tell recruits all the time, like, this is not something that we just throw on the board. This is who we are. This is what we're about. And this is how we're going to kind of, grow into these values, you know, each and every year as a program. And we don't want our players to just kind of regurgitate answers on our values. Mm-hmm. We want them to come to life for them. So relentless effort, you know, may mean a little bit different for an incoming freshman than it means to a junior. Mm-hmm. You know, or unbreakable spirit is going to mean something different than a senior to a sophomore. But we want, when they speak about these values, we want them all heading in the same direction. Mm-hmm. Because they're going to come out and they're going to be, they're really going to grow into them, you know, in different ways. So they have been at the pillar, you know, of our program from day one. The first players that I ever recruited and coached to now today, they know what Little Cougar is, what we're about as a program, the environment that we're trying to build every day as a program. And it's something that we, you know, we have, you know, immense pride in, and that we want to grow into even more each and every year. And I could honestly, Marty, I could go into much more detail about all of them and how they kind of live out in our program. But I know we only have so much time here.
No, that's what we're here for, man. Because I think it's great stuff. You know, one of the things that a pen and a napkin is all about is, you know, you could get plays, you could get drills, and I'm not discounting that because it's important to have plays, it's important to have drills. But a lot of times we forget about building these pillars, building these intangibles, because the only way, in my opinion, the only way, and these come, you know, this comes from lessons learned where I've made mistakes. The only way you get players to buy into the plays and the drills is buying into the intangibles, like rule, or for when I was coaching, it was attack, which was, you know, appreciate toughness together. It's been a while since I've gone through the appreciate right. toughness together, aggressiveness, compete, knowledge. You know, those were that was our acronyms. So I mean, let's dive into it. This was probably the thing I was most excited to talk about with you, Jared. So yeah, I mean, tell us more about it. You know,
yeah, I'll step into kind of the third part of it. So we have our why, we have our core values, and then the third portion of it is our standards of behavior. So as our guys grow, and we do. Like, we're getting ready to do a, you know, some retreat style things with our current team here in a couple weeks, and we'll do a lot of things early in the fall to kind of really dive in, and so we learn about what our why is and what our values are. But the third part of it, our standards of behavior, what we do every year is we have a team session where we basically say we ask all our players, and we break them up into groups, and we ask, where do you represent MVNU men's basketball? You know, where are the places? You know, and places for us are obviously, you know, at practice, at a game, on the road, in chapel here at school, in the classroom, on social media, whatever it is. They come up with all these particular places. And then every year we want each particular team to come up with their own standards of behavior. So the why and our Rule Cougar, the values, those are always going to be the same. But the standards of behavior are the ones that may change a little bit from year to year depending on the team, because we want our players to take complete ownership of those standards. Mm-hmm. And what those standards do, they filter out from our why and our values. And so we ask them, hey, where do you represent MVNU men's basketball? And what are the behaviors that we want to see at these particular places? Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of facilitate a session. Each group will come up with answers, and you know, some of them will be very maybe generic or bland. And you know, I'll ask a little bit deeper questions for them to dive a little bit deeper in what does that mean. So we want very specific things to come out, like, hey, this is a standard of behavior that mirrors our why, that mirrors our values. So, you know, an example is, you know, on the bus, you know, one of our longtime bus drivers, his name is Don. Mm-hmm. So on the road, a standard of behavior is thank Don. So every time we step off the bus, every player is saying thank you, Dom. Whether he's dropping us off at a pregame meal or a game, you know, we're thanking Don. After a game, and this is kind of got some, a couple people got clips of this on social media a few times, but after a game, we bring it in as a group, and then automatically we sprint over. And we clean up our bench area, all the cups, and then we straighten out the chairs. So we want it to look exactly the way it looked when we got there.
Yeah.
And doesn't matter if we, you know, play extremely well or we play extremely poor. That's a standard of behavior that we're going to step into.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all these standards of behaviors at every particular place. And then we tape them up into their lockers, and they know that, hey, these behaviors are, you know, exemplifying what Will Cougar is all about, and exemplifying what, you know, the why of a program is mm-hmm. all about.
And when the players are responsible for those behaviors, they know that they are supposed to thank Don. Or this year, you know, as opposed to last year, something new comes up, but they put that down themselves. Now they are accountable for those behaviors because they're the ones that have recognized that this is what is going to be important for our program. And without these behaviors, whether it's on the floor or off the floor, it doesn't matter what we do, or it's going to be much harder for us to accomplish what we want to when it comes to the winning and losing if we don't adhere by the pillars of the program.
Right, right. Without a doubt, we talk about our program all the time. You know, we are always becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Like we want to become the very best that we are capable of becoming. You know, and whether that's in basketball, whether that's as a student, whether that's as a friend, a brother, whatever that may be, we are always becoming. So we're trying to build habits and structures in the environment where each player can kind of grow at their own pace to become the absolute best version of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Who or what were some of the, I hate to say the word resources, but where did you look to help develop these pillars and how did you land upon them?
Yeah, you know, I look back. A lot of people. It's an accumulation of, you know, obviously being around my dad and his program. I have an older brother who was, a baseball and basketball player and coached college baseball and is now a high school basketball coach. He helped me put together these values. Longtime women's basketball coach at Ashland University, by the name of Coach Sue Ramsey, you know, one of the best culture builders that I've ever been around, helped me kind of, you know, structure these, as well. I believe I listened to a podcast of yours where you talked about a lot of, I'm a big book reader. So I read all the books on culture building, environment building. So a lot of things along the way. And I will say this, Will Cougar isn't like, it's constantly evolving. It's constantly growing. And it's hopefully constantly improving year after year.
Mm-hmm. You're in a unique situation. You've got a wife who is an incredibly, as a basketball player, incredibly talented Division I player, two-time, I believe Miss Ohio two times as a high school player. Am I right with that, Jerry? And she has, you guys have this great situation where you're working together to help educate kids about basketball, about life, and everything in between.
So how is your wife and her experiences, how has that helped influenced your career and helped you grow as a coach and help you become the best coach that you can be? As you, I love this phrase that you use, we are always becoming. So how are you continually becoming the best coach that you can be with the aid of your wife?
Man, she's incredible. You know, she's the best recruit, the all-time best recruit I've ever had. I always tell my players jokingly that, but also very seriously, that, you know, they come over for dinner all the time, and I don't care how good they think they are as a player, they're going to be at best the second best player at dinner that night, because cause my wife is no doubt going to be the best, because she was a big time player, obviously, two-time Miss Basketball, won two state championships, went on and played at the University of Dayton, was a Hall of Famer at Dayton. She knows the game inside and out, and she's just incredibly, incredibly supportive of me, our program, our guys, and could not do this without her and her support. And we've really you know, we've built a kind of a unique kind of camp here, what we call our Rural Cougar Camps, and she does that with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's also, you know, she's the associate executive director at the Ohio High School Athletic Association, and when she finds spare time, she'll kind of helps me co-direct, you know, camps. And we also do a league, a development league in the fall and winter, where we hold clinics and we play a unique kind of 3-on-3 type of game to help young kids really develop and understand how to play the game. But my wife is amazing, could not do this without her support and her commitment.
Well, as they say, Coach, the first people that should be allowed into heaven are the spouse of a coach, and You know, my wife sacrificed a lot for 28 years, 27 of them we were together, I guess. So she, you know, 27 of the 28 years, but, and it's gotta be it, in some ways, it's gotta make your life a little bit easier in that when you've got a disappointing loss, or you just say, hey, I just need to crunch some film for a couple hours after tonight's game. I need it. She's been there. She's done that. She gets it. And there's no, sometimes you have that push and pull in relationships and being a spouse, I say that tongue in cheek, but being the spouse of a coach is not easy, because there are a lot of ups and downs, and it makes it, I would think, easier for your relationship where she gets that. She's been on that proverbial roller coaster multiple times.
Yep. Yeah, no, she gets it. And, you know, I told a lot of people ask me when they're getting into coaching, just, you know, advice and different things. And I always tell people, coaching, it's not a job, you know, it's not a career. It's a lifestyle, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be, there's a certain level of commitment and you're kind of always on, you know, you kind of always have to be on and to have a wife and partner and Kristen that really, really understand and gets it. I could not be more thankful.
Mm-hmm. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp. It's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Jared, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
All right. At this time, we're going to jump into our John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Coach Renee, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
I'm ready.
All right. From page 124 into page 125 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, here's the John Wooden quote of the day. When emotions take over, reason flies out the window and prevents you from functioning near your level of competency. Mistakes occur when your thinking is tainted by excessive emotion.
That's a big time quote. And that book wouldn't, I remember my older brother gave me that particular book and one that he read, and you know, he had about the entire book underlined and starred, and just so much wisdom in all the Wooden books, but that one for sure. But honestly, the first thing that comes to mind when I hear that, I'm actually in a group of dads that are reading a book right now, and it's Raising Emotionally Strong Boys. And as I read that book, obviously every book I read, I kind of read through the lens of a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so much, there's a lot of wisdom in that book that not only for me as a father, but obviously as a coach as well. But they talk about learning how to recognize, you know, when you're getting to that emotional state and having the ability to regulate, you know, in that particular time when your emotions are so high. And that's something that I think has to be practiced. It has to be worked on. It has to be talked through, you know, as whether it's your son or your players, because obviously basketball is a very emotional game.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of emotional moments throughout the game. So having the ability to recognize those moments and being able to kind of pause and kind of collect yourself, and they use the term in that book, regulate,
mm-hmm.
is really, really important. And I think of, you know, something that happens in a game, you know, for us, if we have a player that turns the ball over, you know, most coaches, they talk about that quote-unquote next play mentality or next play. You hear that term a lot.
Yep.
And what we do, I cannot remember who I got this from, but essentially every guy on the floor, if somebody turns it over, we don't want that guy just kind of hanging out in his emotions,
mm-hmm.
and bringing that into the next play. So we use the term get a touch. So every time someone turns it over, automatically we want every guy on the floor running over and getting a touch. And that touch is kind of like a moment to regulate as a player to now move on to the next play. Okay, a mistake has been made. I cannot dwell on that mistake. Now I have to move on to the next play and be at my very best. And I cannot be at my very best if I'm emotionally in a state where I'm worried or reacting to that play. I've got to learn from it in the moment, and then I got to move on quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So getting a touch from a team from other teammates kind of helps me control that emotion and then move on to the next play with focus.
Mm-hmm. And knowing that you have the support of your teammates, hey, we're all going to make mistakes out here. It's a mistake riddled game. Now, as Bob Knight once said, you know, victory favors the team that makes the fewest mistakes. But that doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes. You just want to try and limit those mistakes, if at all possible. And knowing that, you know, it's writing it's the fine art of coaching, where you've got to you know, hey, we're going to make mistakes, but we've got to keep those mistakes going in the right direction. But when they inevitably happen, here's our strategy for dealing with it. And I think that's kind of what you're looking at, right, Jared?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. That is kind of our strategy, our focus of, okay, this mistake happened. You know, how do we as a group kind of work together strategically in that moment to move on from that mistake, learn from that mistake, and move on to the next play. And honestly, teams and players that have the ability to move on in the right way as quickly as they can are normally the ones that are going to make less mistakes as they move on in that game or their season. So I think handling failure, handling mistakes is obviously so important, you know, at the college level, at the high school level. And, you know, I coach a lot of my son's team. My oldest son is 10, and I coach a lot of his teams and specifically baseball. And obviously baseball, you're making mistakes all the time throughout the game. There's a lot of failure in baseball.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best youth sports there is, just because you learn to deal with failure often. And those, it's such a great area as a young kid to work on that, kind of regulating that failure and moving on to the next.
Yeah. At the highest levels in baseball, if you fail 7 out of 10 times, you're considered great. One of the greatest.
Right.
You know, I mean, in that's a crazy concept there. So
it really is.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about player development. Obviously, like you said, you're a basketball family. Your wife was a great player. You were a terrific player. When you're at the small school level, you're not recruiting, obviously, the 5 stars that are come in. They're going to come in and they're ready made. Everything is about developing those players. So take us through kind of your philosophy of player development, what you try to do with your guys, and the program that you have set up. I'm just going to kind of sit back, as I say at this point all the time. I'm going to let you kind of roll with this and cook with it. If I feel the need to interrupt, I'll try to do so as politely as I possibly can. But tell us about your player development philosophy.
Yeah, you know, it kind of all started as a player. You know, I was a player that was constantly kind of obsessed at just getting better, being more skilled, becoming a better ball handler. You know, I grew up, my dad, there was an old VHS tape, the Steve Alford All-American work.
I remember
as a kid watching my older brother would do that workout with the big ball, and then he would do it with the small ball right afterwards. And that was an era where it was an era where trainers kind of were coming into play. You had to learn how to work out on your own and get better on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it started with me, is I love to be in the gym, even by myself, just working on my game and becoming more skilled as a player. And then as I got into coaching, I got to know Gannon Baker really mm-hmm. well. And he was kind of one of the first kind of well-known, you know, skilled trainers.
Yep.
You know, as they've kind of grown and evolved over the years. And as an assistant, you know, even with my dad's team at Middletown High School and then at Ashland and UNC Asheville, I kind of worked everybody out. I was kind of the assistant coach that put all our players through skill workouts, you know, no matter what the position was. So I developed a great love for skill workouts. And then for us, coming back to our program here at MVNU, you know, we we don't have, you know, some of the infrastructure that maybe some other teams have across the country at our level. And we really have to bring players in. We have to develop. Mm-hmm. They have to become, you know, much better players than they were from day one. We redshirt a lot of guys. We redshirt anywhere from 1 to 3 players every year. And some of my best teams, you know, throughout the years have been guys that were, you know, redshirt juniors, redshirt seniors that really developed throughout. And on top of that, the way we play the game, you know, we are a full court pressing, motion-based team. The way we play demands development. Mm-hmm. It demands guys to get better and grow as they go. And to kind of get, you know, get into a little bit more, you know, of the details of what we do, we have a ton of we kind of build everything through our ball handling and our footwork series. We have multiple footwork series. We have multiple things that we do with the ball. We tell guys all the time that, one, you have to have complete control over your feet as a basketball player. If you don't have complete control over your feet, then you're going to put a cap, you know, on your growth ability offensively. And then with the ball, you know, we believe the better you become with the ball in your hands, again, no matter what position you play, the better player you're going to become. Mm-hmm. So we put our guys in all kinds of different ball handling scenarios to get better and sharper with the ball. And, you know, I just did a championship production DVD, you know, not too long ago where, you know, building culture through skill development. And that really, you know, our spring sessions are, well, completely focused on skill development. And then the first part of our fall sessions are completely honed in on skill development. And not only with the coach in the gym, but teaching our guys how to work out on their own. And I think one of the roadblocks in a way, now don't get me wrong, you know, skill trainers and coaches in the gym, those are an unbelievable resource for players, and it's an unbelievable advantage for players today. But I also believe that the players have to have the ability to work themselves out.
Yeah.
To know what do they need to work on and how do they go about doing that. Mm-hmm. So for our players, you know, they get a packet, you know, going into the summer, and they have a bunch of blank pages. And, you know, I don't know if they fill those out or not, but we teach them how to, like, hey, when you go to the gym, have a plan.
Yeah.
You know, have a plan. When you go to the weight room, you have a plan. You know what you're doing. But you see a lot of players today, just because they've kind of only, when they go to the gym, it's either with a coach or with a trainer, they kind of don't know what to do.
Yeah.
On their own.
We've lost that ability for kids to just go into the gym or go to the playground and just play. Like that's right. One thing I feel like, and I used to use this phrase a lot with our players, you know, this is one of those situations where the adults have screwed it up for the kids. We've lost that ability. Just go in the gym and just get better. Just get better. Just take an hour and try to get better on your own. And think of, be creative. Do this, though, that, you know, it doesn't have to be for these 5 minutes we're going to do this, for these 7 minutes we're going to do this. You know, just do that. I agree with you wholeheartedly there, Jared. Yeah. I can't agree with that more.
And another thing that I always, this is a pet peeve of mine, but a lot of players, like, you'll watch when they, whether they're just at a game, you know, warming up for a game, or they're in their gym, you know, in the gym before practice. If you watch most players when they're shooting on their own, and I think this is a flaw. I think coaches have to teach this, is players will almost always dribble and then shoot when they're just kind of like mindlessly shooting on their own. Where now, kind of going back all the way to the Steve Alford All-American workout, you had to teach yourself how to flip the ball to yourself and catch it.
Yeah.
And And most players, when you see them shooting on their own, they don't flip the ball themselves. Mm-hmm. They dribble and then they shoot. And whether they realize that or not, you know, that is, to me, that's kind of creating some flaws, you know, in their shot, because they're mindlessly doing that. And a lot of times you're building up so many reps of mindlessly just dribbling and shooting. You're not working enough on a catch and shoot opportunity just on your own.
Yeah.
And that's something, honestly, that's something that we'll, you know, we work on, you know, in the spring. It's like, hey, when you got to flip the ball to yourself and you got to catch it yourself. You can't rely on someone rebounding for you every time, or having a gun in the gym.
Yep.
You know, a shooting machine in the gym. And so, yeah, those are just small details and small things about our player development approach. But at the end of the day, like, you got to develop. I don't care if you're coaching, fourth graders, you know, all the way up to college, you know, all the way up to the pros. Guys have to continue to develop as players, and they have to continue to sharpen skills as players, and having the ability to get in the gym and work out and improve is really, really important, you know, Saul.
Mm-hmm. You were talking a little bit. Do you have your guys track some stuff in the off season as well? Did I hear that correctly, Jaron?
Yeah, we do. We'll give them packets, and we don't collect them. Like, you know, at one point, you know, we collected the packets and made sure, but we say, like, hey, it's in the summertime. Like, it is your responsibility to improve as a player. Now you have to take responsibility and ownership of your game. And this is a resource, you know, this is a guide. And now hopefully they go and take that to a different level. And what it does, it gives them ideas, it gives them goals, you know, whether it's shooting goals or one-on-one game goals, or ball handling goals, you know, throughout the summer. It's a resource. It's a guide to help them improve, because, again, you know, like we alluded to, you know, I'm hoping this is continuously gonna grow and change, but guys, you know, players don't know how to get better on their own often.
Mm-hmm.
and they have to be guided to do that, and put in situations where they can make decisions on their own game as they choose.
Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Folks, we had a great day on April the 12th at the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. And if you couldn't be there, that stinks. But what's fortunate for you is we taped everything that we did. So if you are interested in ordering any of our clinic videos or all of our clinic videos from our great presenters on April the 12th, it's there for you. All you have to do is DM me on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got Andy King talking about 5-on-5 transition and controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer from Iowa State University on player development. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse on coaching through an administrator's eyes. Wade Coulter talking about pressure defense and extending your pressure defense. Raz Vanderloo with a basketball smorgasbord of stuff from Sioux City East High School, USA Basketball, and Jamie Smith from Solon High School, talking about shooting and shooting technique, shooting fundamentals. It's a great lineup, great coaches, great presentations. They're there for you. $10 a piece is all the videos cost. If you want to get all six of them, I'll bundle it together for you. $50 for all six videos. So coaches, if you weren't there, too bad. But because we're thinking ahead here, we've got the videos available for you. Give me a shout out. Let me know if you want to order any or all of the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Spring Clinic Coaches Presentations. While they're getting better with their skill work here, Jared, like you had mentioned it earlier, and you teed it up for me, you made it easy for me. You like to play full court, and you're a motion offense guy, which as I grew as a coach, as I became more seasoned and experienced, I went away from the pattern stuff and went more motion based, et cetera, et cetera. Tell us a little bit about your motion philosophy, how you build that up, why you do what you do. What are maybe some unique things that you do within your motion concepts?
Yeah, so we build our motion, I would say, differently, you know, every single year, obviously depending on the experience of our team, depending on the makeup of our team. And we do it really in a variety of ways, depending on, you know, where they're at. But we have something that we call team shooting, and then we have something, a game that we call league. And team shooting, team shooting is going to be like some patterned actions. And it's not necessarily, hey, this is our offense. We're kind of building up their toolkit of ideas of what they can do on the floor together. The spacing, the screening, the when to duck in, the different specific actions that we may try to build within our motion offense. We do that by, we call team shooting. So we basically have a language out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could say, all right, hey, we're going pacer into a two-man, score off the stem. Now, that sounds like a different language to most, but our guys will know, okay, that's basically they're basically getting to four sides there, and then the last action, they're going to score off of a stem, which is basically like some people call it a zoom. Mm-hmm. So we develop it through there, and then we go and then we play league. And league, we can do it 3-on-3, we can do it 4-on-4, we can do it 5-on-5, and we do different games. Mm-hmm. And league, you know, my older brother Jason, who's a great, great coach in the city of Chicago, he kind of came up with different roles out there in league, and then we kind of came up with kind of how to play the game. So basically, they'll start, like the ball will start in certain areas of the floor, and they get a certain amount of dribbles, and then we tell them kind of how to play.
Yeah,
and basically, you know, and my older brother Jason, he calls them controller, builder, seeker, and we have kind of taken those particular roles as he has kind of defined them. And they're basically different roles within a possession. So, you know, I can be a controller, I can be a builder, I can be a seeker, all within one possession. So, a controller, I'm controlling my space. A builder, I'm building space for others. And a seeker, I'm seeking out space. And these are terms that, again, I have to give all the credit to Jason, that has really, really kind of helped define things within the spacing and the kind of the structure of how we want to play with our emotion. So we play that game. We'll play that game, and then we'll kind of go back to team shooting. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's some 5-versus-0 stuff. Here's some ideas. And then we'll go back to league. And then we'll go to something that we call League 54, where it'll be, and this is one of my favorite games, it's 5-on-4, no dribbles. So now you're basically just finding open space, learning that you understanding that you are in a power play, which is an advantage. You have an advantage on offense, and now, but you have to score and find a really quality shot without, you know, with zero dribbles. And to be honest with you, Marty, that's kind of how we build out our zone offense as well.
Yeah,
a lot of teams don't We don't see a zone a ton, you know, throughout the year. But when we do, you know, we're normally calling out League 54 because that's a game that we play to help build out our motion offense. And we'll do different, you know, 2-0, 3-0 things at times if we feel like certain habits aren't in place. But we want to do as much as we can in terms of all right, here's our team shooting. Here are some ideas. Here are some, this is how you can play off of one another. And basically you're building certain fundamentals throughout the team shooting concepts. But then now you go play league, and now it's just you are reading, you are reacting to the game. Mm-hmm. And it's random. Because at the end of the day, for us, we feel to be at our best. You know, we want to be random out there.
Yeah.
There's going to be some certain automatics. There's going to be certain, I think, actions that players play out of. But we want to make those as random as possible.
Yes. Yeah. Your guys know what they're doing, but the defense doesn't. And so henceforth, if you run your stuff, it's really, really hard to guard. It's going to take a really good defender and a good defensive team to take away the randomness of what you're doing, even though it's not random.
Right. Without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. And it's been great. We've taught it. And again, we've taught it in different ways. You know, I was actually in Chicago this past weekend, with my brother, and he just got his doctorate in global sport leadership at East Tennessee State. And, you know, he's really diving into, the concepts of controller, builder, seeker at an even higher level. I'm super excited to see what all he's learning here in the upcoming year. But I think offense, you know, obviously you have to adapt. You have to, look at the game differently from year to year, I think, just because depending on the makeup of your team. But you have to give your player the ability to read the game, to make decisions on the floor, and to play cohesively out there as a unit. Mm-hmm. And I think when you get to that place, that's when you got a chance to be a really high level offense.
Mm-hmm. Jared, let's wrap it up talking the other major aspect of what you do with your program on the defensive side, which is pressure defense, getting up, pressuring people. You and I are kind of spirit animals here because I'm a motion offense, pressure defense, full court guy as well. So I love hearing the stuff that you're talking about, the limiting of dribbles and different things. Man, you're speaking my language here, Jared. I love it. I love it. I love it. So let's talk a little pressure D. What do you guys like to do there at Mount Vernon Nazarene when it comes to your pressure defense?
Yeah, you know, again, I don't want to say the same thing, but I think full court pressure defense is a lot like motion offense, just because there are so many decisions to be made out there. And I also think, obviously, your full court pressure defense, we have changed it, you know, throughout the years, depending on who we have on our team. You know, at first, when I first took over at MDNU, we were a 2-2-1. Super aggressive Vance Wahlberg like 2-2-1 pressure defense. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really good for us, you know, early on. Really, really taught us how to play at a certain effort level. And then, you know, we kind of went away from pressure there for a few years, and then we've gotten back to it. And it can look different from year to year. You know, when we feel that we're best at our pressure is when we are, we call it tagging up. I'm sure you've had a lot of guests here talk about the concepts of tagging up.
Yep.
And we're just finding the nearest player, and we are putting as much pressure as we can on that particular player. If we feel like we have to put certain guys in certain spots, we give those spots names. So we will tag. And then if it's a made shot, that certain guys are getting to certain areas within within our pressure, full court pressure. But it's something I think if coaches, and I think a lot of coaches will understand this, but man, if you want to press and you want to play pressure, like, you got to do it all the time.
Yep.
Like, it's simpler to tone it back than it is to turn it on.
Exactly.
So really we build out our pressure defense from day one and really all the time. And it's kind of like with our motion offense, we don't call our open gyms. We don't call them open gym. We call it league, just because we want our guys to have a different mindset when they come in here, and they know when they're playing league, they're going to press, and they are going to, when we're playing a 3-on-3 game in the half court, well, it's going to be a possession and a half, because if we score, we are getting into some type of press mm-hmm. within that. So I think it's something that you have to work on consistently all the time. And if you're able to build it into your open gym structure, I think that gives you an advantage to build really, really, really good habits mm-hmm. and get reps at those particular areas, even when you're not, in a practice or game setting.
Yeah. Well, with all of this, I would, and I think, again, we're kind of speaking the same language here. Let's bust it really, really hard at a high intensity level for an hour, then putzing around for an hour and a half and taking 7 minutes in between games and this and that, or whatever it may be. Let's come in. Let's really work hard. Let's get better in a short amount of time. And then let's move on here. But by putting that pressure on consistently, by making it that mental exercise at all times, the players then should not be intimidated or caught off guard, or it's going to be much more difficult to catch them off guard because they're used to being in that environment at all times.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think, as you know, if you want to be a good, full court pressure team, you have to play at a different effort level.
Yep.
Like, and that effort level has to be trained. That effort level becomes a skill. Mm-hmm. For you personally and for your team. And I think if you can play at a certain effort level and consistently be at that certain effort level, that's where your team can get good, in the full court, pressure. We call it, wear down factor, within our press. Like, just continue, keep at it. And the press is an accumulation effect. We may not turn this team over 25 times like we turned another team over. We may only turn them over 13 times, but their point guard has to go against this pressure for 36 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they're back, because their backup only plays six to 8 minutes a game.
Yep.
So that's going to have an accumulation effect. And, I got this from Tobin Anderson, but we just want to find 2 to 3 6-0 runs
yep.
throughout a game. If we can find 2 to 3 6-0 runs throughout a game, then we feel like we're going to be in good shape.
Yep. That was, our philosophy at the high school level. We can play even for 28 minutes. It could go back and forth. But at some point, if we do what we're supposed to do, there's going to be a 4-minute stretch where
right.
we should make a run. And that's going to be the difference right. in the game. But you've got to stay with it. You've got to believe that if you do this, it's going to pay off. And you got to have that belief. Right. You have to have it.
Yeah, my buddy, he's the head coach at IU Indy now, Ben Halley. He calls them blackout runs. Mm-hmm. They're going to find some blackout runs throughout the game. That's just kind of going to be end up being the difference in the game.
Yeah. Great stuff, Jared. Really appreciate this. This has been awesome. Great hour. It doesn't feel like an hour, but we've been talking for an hour now. Jared, if folks want to know more about you, want to know more about your program, how can they find out about it?
Yeah, they can follow me on social media. I'm somewhat active on X or Twitter at J Ronay, and And obviously, they can find more about our program at our website, mvnucougars.com. And man, Marty, I really enjoy talking basketball, and I really enjoyed this conversation.
Well, thanks. The first run on a pen and a napkin was relatively harmless here, so I hope that was for you. So
no, it was great. And again, I just want to thank you for all that you do for the game, and really developing resources for coaches out there to continue to grow and continue to improve. And again, I appreciate you.
Well, thanks, Jared. I appreciate you coming on here today. If you could hold the line here a second, we're going to wrap everything up. Again, great conversation here. Jared Rene, head men's basketball coach, Mount Vernon Nazarene University. I want to thank him for his time. We, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, COSAC Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle here. Download, rate, review, subscribe. Do what you can to help us out here at a pen and a napkin. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Pick up a copy of Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School. I'm headed out for Snow Valley here in about 35 minutes. By the time you folks hear this, you're going to see a few surprises on the Twitter machine. I'm excited to, I don't know, you'll just see it. And if you haven't seen it, go check it out on Twitter. So, but again, want to thank Coach Rene for his time here today. Great conversation. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.